When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Brian Hyatt, and this is Rolling Stone Music Now. Beyoncé's Renaissance Tour will finally hit the US on July 12th in Philadelphia, but she's already playing Europe and the UK, so we wanted to give you a little preview of what to expect. To do so, first we have Brittany Spanos discussing some of the online experience of the show via TikTok and elsewhere. And then from London, we have Daily Telegraph music critic Neil McCormick, who just saw the show in person and gave it a 5-star rave. But first, here's my conversation with Brittany Spanos. We've talked a lot on this show in the past couple of years about how tours are happening in at least two spaces now. Mm-hmm. They're happening in the real world, and they're also happening on TikTok, sometimes almost like concurrently with happening in the real world because people are posting during the show.
The thing that is fascinating with it, because this is the first for a lot of artists right now, this is their first tour in the TikTok moment. And this is Taylor's first tour during TikTok. This is Beyonce's first tour during TikTok. It's like Drake is about to go on tour. It's going to be his first tour during this. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with him. But with Beyonce, it was like very interesting because people were over analyzing her movement on stage and in a way that went beyond, you know, when you think of when we were watching like Beyonce Coachella performance, like everyone was freaking out over it. People were like, she's not dancing the way that she used to. It was very fascinating to see people like talk about Beyonce, who's one of the greatest performers of all time. What if you're watching like a 10-second clip of a song and saying that this is not like Beychella. I'm like, okay, I mean, you're not there.
Apparently, I have to say though, frighteningly, apparently they were correct. Their analysis was savvy because the consensus from reviewers is there seems to be some kind of injury that she's cleverly disguising.
Allegedly, she had gotten foot surgery. It's never been confirmed, I don't think. Everyone had talked about it because in the infamous Dubai concert that she had done earlier this year that no one was supposed to see, that like everyone saw, she was limping during parts of it. There's videos of her limping. I think she was wearing flats or something, like very un-Beyonce. It was a lot of, it was like ballads, heavy type of concert. But yeah, so she had allegedly gotten that and people had noticed the heels on her shoes, the one that is the foot that allegedly had surgery, there's a wider width heel for stability and stuff.
It is incredible in general. Beyonce is in this place that I think is so enviable. I mean, first of all, she's Beyonce. What do you need to say? Mm-hmm. Moves at her own pace. She's in her own world. She went as far as to record an interlude voiceover that says, "You've asked for the visuals. You've called for the queen. But a queen moves at her own pace, bitch, decides when she wants to give you a fucking taste. So get your fork and spoon if you got one." So first of all, that's really, I love her embracing the sort of campiness of pop fandom and also just acknowledging she literally can do what she wants. It's so interesting that she starts with ballads.
Yeah, she's like her own opener for it. It's definitely what, like, when I opened the live stream and I was like watching, I was like, what's going on? I thought this was going to be a different tone for the opening of the concert. But it is really cool that she's doing this moment, you know, as intimate as you can get in a Beyonce stadium show of her performing these ballads by herself, like no dancers behind her. It's just like a really beautiful way to open up the show. Some songs she doesn't really do at shows. It's just not like Halo and EXO.
Judging from fan videos on YouTube, 1+1 always had a throwback R&B feel, but the way she's doing it live, it's like an Otis Redding song or something. Tons of interplay between her voice and the band. Can't wait to actually hear that live.
And Dangerously in Love, she hasn't done in a while. I'm going down a fun selection of deep cut type of songs from her.
So the first show was about 3 hours and it sparked some commentary like, oh, are all pop shows going to be 3 hours now? Taylor and Beyonce, this is how it is. They've raised the bar. And then by the time she got to Cardiff the other day, she actually cut half an hour out of the show. She sliced like 6 songs up.
Yeah, I think it was also like there's issues with the few of the shows in terms of the start time, because there was, they were letting people in late. Like I saw it was like there was like a full fan campaign to make sure that the shows at the London Stadium that are coming up next week are that open earlier because they weren't letting people in as quickly. So
it might not be an attempt to improve the show. It might be because she was worried about curfew.
It could be a mixture of things. Like, it seems like some outfits have changed. Like, people noticed that the bee costume for America Has a Problem. It's kind of like metal, kind of stiff costume for the first few shows. In the last show, it changed to something that she was moving like a lot differently in it in the last, like in the Cardiff shows, because it seemed like it was a much more comfortable costume to wear. And it seems like she was testing out different songs to cut. But the issue, at least like what it seemed like, was that there was, by the time that the concert was supposed to start, most of the stadium was still waiting outside. So they have to open the stadiums a little bit earlier, which I think they also had to do for a lot of other stadium shows, because it's always a shit show and security is really tight at those and all of that. So yeah, I think it was a mixture of things.
I love that they probably had to revamp her costume so she can move better. They're always doing that with Batman outfits in the movies. The actors are always complaining they can't move their head or whatever, so they're always revamping it. So I love that for her.
Yeah, the bee costume itself, the difference in costumes is like, it was a huge headpiece that she was wearing and like this like kind of metal thing. And it's like she changed to like basically like these like wraparound sunglasses and like a bodysuit, and she's moving so much differently now. She's probably like, I need to be able to move my body like a little bit.
She goes backstage and she's like, could I talk to who designed that headdress, please? Oh my God.
It looked great. It was a fun, she was having fun in it, even when she probably couldn't move very much. But
in Cardiff, apparently the crowd was actually dancing. It was really striking to see those Swedish crowds just sitting there, but I guess it's cultural. It really is. That's probably how they show their appreciation, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah. And I do wonder also, again, because this is like the first Beyonce show, solo Beyonce show in years. I think everyone just wants to film it or just be there to be there. And so I feel like that type of thing. There's a ton of videos of it. I've watched many different angles of everything, but it seems like everyone's having a lot more fun, as they should, because I think that's the point of it. And I wonder if that is also, I think it's nice that it was such an unusual rollout for this album, where we didn't have the visuals in terms of people are overthinking what costume to wear because of that, or overthinking like the dance moves that she, like already knowing the dances that she's going to do. It feels very kind of secret clubby almost to kind of re-enter this world of Renaissance.
I also love that it's a really well-received show, and it's done totally the opposite way from the Eras Tour. It just shows how many ways there really are to approach things, because everything is built around the new album. She's not just playing the new album, Renaissance, but she's shoved everything into that framework and playing stuff that fits. I'm glad that she has a bit of 7-Eleven, which is low-key one of my favorite Beyonce songs. in the-
yeah, I love that she does Sweet Dreams with Alien Superstar. That was my favorite. I was like screaming from watching on my phone. Love that song so much. And so it was really fun. And that was also like within the set list. That's like the first time where she's doing a mashup of an older song with one of the Renaissance songs, which I think is really special. But it's also such a testament to this album. This album is so incredible. And I think, especially now, we're almost a year since it was released, but I think genuinely my favorite Beyonce album. I think from start to finish, it's absolutely, like, there's no bad song on that album. Every single song is literally perfect, and it's also just like a really fun album. And so it's such a testament to it that she's able to build the framework out from this album, and not only that, but be able to easily maneuver songs like Diva and Black Parade and like all these Black is King songs as well. It's so beautiful that she's able to build it around this album that is clearly very special to her, because it's dedicated to her uncle Johnny, who was such an important figure in her life.
Yeah, I think I had a month last year where I was basically just listening to that album. It's really incredible. And it's also, it is, I think this tour makes sense because it is a world of its own. Mm-hmm. It is a very seamless album. And from what I understand, the show is very seamless as well. It has that kind of dance party DJ set feel, Neil said, even as it's a totally live show. Based on what you've seen through the little screen, what are you looking forward to?
Oh gosh, I'm really excited for the ball portion of it. I think that's really fun. I know it was a given that she was going to have actual legitimate like ballroom dancers and like voguers and people like Honey Balenciaga, who's such a legend in the space, and having them on stage and on tour and like also such a big part of the show. It's really beautiful to see, and the fact that there is like a mini ball in the middle of pure honey. Really excited for that. And I love the robot, big fan of the robot hands. Love that she's this is such like a tech forward concert, which is again such a testament to Beyonce as a performer. She's always reinventing that space. There's like the LED outfit change that happens before I think Church Girl, and there's like the robot hands that she's like doing choreography with and who are like moving her costume, and it's like kind of surreal to see that. So I think that's going to be really special. But yeah, I feel like I'm just like excited. Like this album I've been listening to nonstop since it came out, so I'm just excited to like dance to it.
Yeah, and it does seem like that kind of show.
Yeah.
And it's, I want to see Love on Top as my favorite Beyonce song.
Yeah.
And I just want to be a part of a crowd that doesn't screw it up, because apparently in Wales, they did it very well. I think it's Sweden where I saw the footage where the crowd botched the key changes.
Yeah, they
hideously.
Really did.
It's asking a lot of a crowd for them to nail the key changes. And I think it's going to be, I almost wonder whether it's like a weird Beyonce joke to try to get the crowd to sing key changes, because if they can nail that even 20% of the time, I'll be impressed.
Yeah. Just a little challenge. Like, Pedro, take a price out. Please, please do this. Show that you really deserve to be here.
The moment when she goes from Love on Top into Crazy in Love must be incredible. So I want that transition.
Yeah.
And I was talking about this with Neil. I want to see how that plays out where she hits this peak. That's 25 songs in. And then there's like 7 more songs, 8 more songs. And I think the only old song, there's Naughty Girl, maybe one other older song, at least in the shortened set list. And so it's so interesting to end like that. And I guess Taylor ends with new songs too.
Yeah.
So I hate to do the comparison, but these are the two big tours right now.
Yeah. These are the big stadium moments that are happening. But yeah, even without having necessarily the idea of a bunch of number one singles along with it, or like being, she only released one technical single. She only released Break My Soul as a single. Cuff It accidentally became a single. Because people loved it and created a dance challenge around it. She has done nothing else around the album since then, but fans have built sort of their own affinity for the song. Heated is a huge fan favorite. Like even just like the back half of Renaissance has become so beloved. And so there is like really no need she could just power through the end of that, because that's such a party. Like especially past Plastic Off the Sofa, it's just like dance song, dance song, dance song after that. You could just really vibe with all of that to the end. I mean, it ends with a Donna Summer flip. Like, there's no better way to end the concert. She doesn't need an encore with anything else. Beyonce doing Summer Renaissance is more than enough.
It's such a great point about the singles, because actually what she did was one of the wildest flexes ever. She drops Break My Soul. Oh, baby, baby. And for the first time in a while, that's a number one Hot 100 hit, a number one hit. And then she's like, I'm good. No more singles. Like, just enjoy the album. And that's
nothing.
That's really funny, because it's and there's such a logic to it, because you got your number one.
Yeah.
You got the attention. What's the point of the it's always tough to have more than one number one off an album. So like, why drop one that's going to be number five? Just you're good.
It's
so funny.
I think also like to what you were saying earlier, just like the idea that she's having so much fun with this tour and seems to be just like really feeling it and like interacting with people. And just there is like such a Beyonce stage presence idea of her just being like this like very like diva face, like focused, getting through, like she's like really putting on like a full on show. Like she's always putting on a great show and everything. But like this is like her sort of having a little fun with the audience a little bit with it. And I think that is because this album, while it is such a statement in a lot of ways for the queer community, for the Black queer community specifically, and like for her Uncle Johnny and just like the music that he helped raise her on, this is the last two albums that she toured were so heavy and so like deeply personal in a way that like she had really never unlocked before. And so those tours and those like visual elements of it had to be as heavy to go along with it. But for this one, like, she's just able to create a party. And I think that's nice. I think, you know, with she released Break My Soul, it was like a huge party hit. And she's like, okay, like, the rest of the album is just meant to be this, like, this party album, this really fun thing that you could just put on and dance to, and that's all you need from it. You don't need all this other kind of like stuff to go with it. And that's what the tour feels like, to extend that.
Think about how deep she is into her career at this point and able to play a show based on the new album.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
I know. She could have literally not done any others. I would have been excited to go to this concert. And I think a lot of fans would have been really excited to go to this concert and just heard Renaissance. Like, that's how excited people were about being able to see her live, but also to hear this album live. I think there, if she had just done Renaissance altogether and then nothing else, I would have left. I would have gotten my money's worth. Like, I would have been like, that's worth a lot.
Yeah. Destiny's Child first charted 26 years ago.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton was president. And here she is on stage sounding absolutely stunning and just building a whole show around quite possibly her best album. It's, you know, what an artist.
She only does one song from Lemonade. She like the self-titled.
I saw some Reddit complaints about that.
I didn't even notice that until a couple days later. And I was like, I was thinking about the set list and talking about it with someone. I was like, oh yeah, she doesn't do Sorry or Hold Up. And I'm like, I just want to hear Renaissance. I'm okay with that. Everything else is just like cherry on top. Like, I'm always excited to hear Diva. Like, that's going to be a given. But I love that it's really centered around this really incredible project.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories, and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Bleav Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
There were all these rumors that Renaissance is a multi-part project, and then maybe there's a country album or like a rock album or got metal. Who knows?
It's not a rumor, really, rumor entirely. It was on her website.
You remind me, what was the deal?
It says it didn't say, it said act one was Renaissance. And then it had two other acts listed on there, and I forget the names of them, but there was an indication that this was one of three, but no one's heard anything since. And so did she speak too soon? Is it not coming? There's a lot of rumors, though. None of those rumors have been confirmed. No one knows the sound of the other two, but there was sort of a thing on the website during Renaissance lead up where it was like, here, there's two other parts.
Cause it was weird. I think maybe people thought that they would drop before any tour, because it's weird to do a Renaissance tour and then release two more parts of Renaissance. But she's Beyonce. She could do anything she wants.
Yeah. Yeah. So she literally when she announced Renaissance, it in her Instagram post, it said act one Renaissance.
So, well, we'll see. And she's reserving the right to completely change her mind. Perhaps we'll see.
Oh, and then, yeah. So it was in like a message that she wrote when the album was released that she said it was part of a three act project.
Oh, it could be act one Renaissance. And then the other two albums are called something different.
Yeah, I think there's going to be two other things, but no one knows the sound. That's the thing. Like, everyone has a lot of theories about the sound of it, where it's like each album's going to be like a different sound. Who knows? It could be all disco. It could be whatever. Yeah, it could be anything. I personally love the sound of Renaissance. I love disco Beyonce. I love a disco diva. And I think Beyonce is the perfect disco diva. And so I'm cool with her making more like house and disco music. But I'll listen to it. I'll eat it up, whatever it is.
Thanks, as always, to Brittany Spanos. And next up, as I mentioned, we have Neil McCormick. He's the music critic of the Daily Telegraph. He also wrote a great book called Killing Bono about how he grew up with the members of U2 and had his own band at the time and what it was like watching their entire story happen. He was also ghostwriter of the book U2 by U2 and wrote a novel called Zero. And here's our conversation about Beyonce's Renaissance tour. So, Neil, you took a train ride to the other side of the UK from London to Wales to go see Beyonce the other night. And it sounds like from your review, it sounds like it was worth it.
Yeah, it was definitely worth it. You would travel a lot further than London to Wales to see arguably the greatest pop star of our time, certainly in the top five. And this is, you know, a mega show. I've seen everything, okay? And we've seen the rock bands doing multimedia super shows for ages. And the last 10 or 20 years, pop bands are doing that kind of production as well. This was something else. It was like a stadium scaled disco, a science fiction stadium scaled super club. She had the biggest screen I think I've ever seen, which was not just wide, it was thick. And the band was inside the screen. There's a kind of arch with the band inside and part of the stage inside. And then the kind of central second stage that they always do now, there's a circular run, practically took up the whole floor of the stadium. She drove a tank on it. That's how big it was. A silver tank, the campus tank you've ever seen. A tank that she should definitely donate to President Zelensky to drive the head of his troops and terrify Putin with the attack of the tank. It was a very spectacular show. Just on a pure show level, it was as good as anything you can see at the moment. And then it was very camp and comically almost ridiculous. It didn't take itself too seriously. She rides on a flying horse. There's a lot of great spectacular production. But then there's just something. That woman can sing. This is a live band for the most part. It, like everything these days, it uses some production trickeries. But the vocals alone, I know there's a nuance to her singing and a flavor to her singing that's incredible, but then there's this kind of sheer lung power that you associate with people like Robert Plant or something.
I think that's the Tina Turner influence, among other things, coming through.
Tina, amazing, an amazing influence. Beyonce's been an absorber of incredible influences all along. But it's a long show. It was 2.5 hours. And she is ripping it up, singing like a superpower for the whole of that show. It was loud too, I have to say. It was loud like a heavy metal show. It was on every level, you were being bombarded by sensory attack for 2.5 hours. And solid groove as well. Another thing I thought was really interesting is that this is, I know as maybe in techno we've seen this kind of thing starting to happen for quite a while, big production techno. But when I say it was like a super disco, it made me think this is what James Brown would be like if he staged a U2 show. That is one funky band and they have that crowd moving from about the third or fourth song in and they don't let up. There's no pausing for soppy ballads or intimate acoustic moments. Once the groove is slamming, it's slamming for about 2.25 hours solid.
There were some videos of the opener in Sweden, and Swedish crowds are Swedish crowds, and they were shockingly, to American eyes, shockingly subdued while Beyonce gave her all. They were just sitting there. Was the crowd in Wales a little more out of their seats?
I arrived in Cardiff on a train and walked through the center of this medieval Welsh city, which had apparently been taken over. There was just women in cowboy hats and silver costumes all over the town and men in drag all over this place. And they practically closed off the whole town to let, you know, 60,000 Beyonce fans have their day. They were absolutely up for a party, and they were very full on it, to the point that she did a song that is quite complex in its rhythmic flow and has three key changes.
Love on Top.
Yeah. The crowd starts singing it and she just stopped singing, and they did the whole song with all the key changes.
That is impressive, because there was a video of her trying to let the crowd sing it in some other town, and they completely screwed up the key changes already. So Wales acquitted itself, apparently.
Yeah, the Welsh are famous for their singing.
And then tell me about the beginning of the concert, because it starts with ballads. I think it starts with Dangerously in Love, obviously at this point an old classic.
Yeah, the set list is pretty odd in a way. It's fairly daring, really. It's not a greatest hits show. It is the Renaissance album in full, although interspersed, and maybe one or two songs from each of the other albums. I think she did something from every album, but they're not the obvious ones necessarily. So she doesn't do massive hits, like even like Halo, which was... She doesn't do Single Ladies. She does nothing from Destiny's Child years. And she opens it with these, with effectively with three ballads in a silvery gown, looking like Shirley Bassey about to do a Bond song. And the band is not seen at this point. It's very solo, very focused on this tiny little figure in this huge thing with this immense voice. It's almost, I can sing better than anybody you've ever seen or heard in your life. We've done that bit, and then boom, boom, boom. And then the show begins. But yeah, it's pretty impressive. She could be in Las Vegas now doing the obvious greatest hits show instead of contriving a way to bring her entirely new album around. And she's become this kind of curator, which sort of Bowie-esque figure in some ways, where she brings in all these influences from club culture, from the underground, from scenes that wouldn't otherwise, and artists who wouldn't otherwise be getting into the mainstream spotlight. And then she shines her kind of megawatt talent all over that and makes it pop music.
Keen-eyed fans have pointed out that she seems to have some sort of perhaps injury, that she's favoring one foot and doing a very efficient and impressive job of kind of moving past that and making you not notice that she might not be physically capable at this particular second of moving the way she might usually do.
I don't think she dances as physically full on. In fact, she definitely doesn't, as we've seen her in the past. But then it is a 2.5, 2, 3 hour show. The opening in Stockholm was an over 3 hour show. She seems to have culled 7 or 8 or even 9 songs from the set, and probably for the better. And she still seems very mobile. There's no sense of her stinting, but she's also singing live all the way through. And maybe we're very used to seeing pop stars throwing themselves about the stage now because they're not singing live. We're in a point of time where the fake singing that is going on stages around the world is at levels I would never have believed people would just accept as live entertainment.
On a somewhat deeper level, what did you see going on thematically in this show?
I think a theme that's running through this is an acknowledgement of Black history, Black culture, and Black pop music. We've come to have a very different attitude towards the disco music that was so demeaned by critics that dominated the discourse for so long and didn't take dance music, didn't treat it with any of the kind of seriousness that we treated rock music. And there's been a big corrective to that narrative, and Beyoncé is a big part of that corrective. This is a show that ends with Summer Renaissance, which is Donna Summer. Donna Summer Renaissance by any other name. Hey, you sexy mother. There's the great shout out to all the female artists, not during that song, but during the whole production, which Grace Jones gets not one, but two mentions, presumably because she couldn't find somebody to rhyme with Jones. But yeah, that's that acknowledgement and veneration of the history is a big part of this. Also made me think, because it's so science fiction, it made me think of George Clinton and the mothership. All of that is in there. It's an Afrofuturist, feminist. There's powerful messages going while the vibe is, let's have a great time. She's having a great time. She was having a great time in Wales. There's a lot of secret smiling to herself as she pulls off some stunt or some vocal or sees something in the crowd. of course, projected up onto the big screens, but she seems pretty happy and very engaged through the whole gig.
It's really interesting, again, the unique structure, as we discussed, starting with ballads and said that it's basically like she's her own opening act. But then also, if you look at the set list, around, so there's 33 songs in total at the Wales show. Around the 24th and 25th song is where she pulls out Love on Top, which is perhaps not the biggest hit, but a huge fan favorite. We ranked it, I think, number one on Monica Perconte, who did our list of the best Beyonce song, ranked that as number one in her entire catalog. So it's the fan favorite. And then she plays Crazy in Love, probably, again, one of her absolute most beloved songs and biggest hits. And then there are eight more songs, none of which are huge hits.
Yeah, it is a power move. I think it's amazing because we know what it's like when new artists play new songs. The Rolling Stones, when the Rolling Stones say, here's a song from my new album, half the stadium gets up and takes a toilet break. She's reversed that completely because this is her new album. But there's so much flavor on that Renaissance album. And it gives her the chance to pull out those flavors. And also the production, actually, it doesn't overdo things. There's pyrotechnics for one bit of one song in the whole 2.5 hours. You're like, wow, they brought all that pyrotechnic gear and it went off once. There's a giant disco ball that floats around for 1 minute and is never seen again. Again, there's lots of things going on which maybe draw attention to one bit of a song or one idea of a song, and then it's put aside. So there's a lot to engage your senses all the way through and to keep you with the music. It's a very well-designed production, as you would expect.
Tell me about the robot arms that I think they were used in the song Cozy and a few other songs. What was the deal there?
We have the technology. We will build it. They are exactly what they seem to be. They are mobile robot arms. They're holding some kind of screens that she dances between. They appear holding different things. The science fiction theme is very much present throughout. The dance section starts with her in a kind of Metropolis mold as the android being put together, a bit Janelle Monáe. Clearly, if Beyoncé's instruction to her designers has been science fiction, and so they've just taken some of that new robot technology and worked it into the choreography. You'll start seeing more and more of that. It's impressive because it's a kind of first, but actually, I've seen robots do more interesting things than just wave some screens in front of Beyoncé.
It does seem like the ante is being upped once again for spectacle and technology at concerts this year.
It does seem like that. There's a sort of contra thing to that. As we were saying, a lot of people accept entertainment now that would have been dismissed in the past. With a jumped up public appearance at a disco, they're singing to a backing track with a couple of screens, and the production is actually very minimal. They don't take musicians. They're keeping their costs down. And I'm always amazed that the public accepts that and think to myself, they're young people. Maybe they've missed out on the Madonna years. Maybe they don't understand that. So on one level of pop that's going around arenas, I'd say production has gone back decades. Even bands going around don't take that much with them now because the costs have become overbearing. And they need to be on the road a lot. Whereas the major artists, they've always been involved in a little bit of an arms race about who can do the best thing. And there are some post-pandemic, there's a lot of major artists going on the road or getting ready to go on the road. And in those cases, it does feel like no expense is being spared. And we're seeing some breakthroughs. The Taylor Swift show is fantastic. I went to Fiona, saw the opening night, and to pull off a show that's that visually great, that has that many moods, but that has at its center this real songwriting, singing person that feels like real music, that was something special. Beyonce has spent 25 years doing what she does at an incredibly high level and always trying to up the ante. Her shows have always been pretty great, but have had both music and spectacle. I'm sure there's a competitive edge coming in Taylor probably has the more manic and involved fans at the moment, but this is Beyoncé showing who's the queen. And it's at the top level of where a show has ever been. As we know, I love U2, and I've been around the U2 story since it began, even before it began. They're the ones who really set off this technological arms race with these very theatrical multimedia shows. And the Sphere is going to blow all of this stuff to smithereens. You have to go somewhere to see the Sphere. In fact, you have to go to Las Vegas, which not everybody wants to do. You can't be taking that technology around on the road yet. What you can take is a massive multimedia spectacular production like Beyoncé's. But I have to say, and again, the spectacle's great. It is a kind of I'm going to knock your socks off type of show business dialed up to as far as you can dial up. But at its core is the music, and the music is great. This show would still be great if she'd just gone on and done it in a theater.
Well, Neil, thank you so much for joining me. You're definitely one of the few people, very few, who's seen both Taylor and Beyoncé already this year. So congratulations on that.
Yes. Yeah. There are some perks with this job.
And that's our show. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, subscribe to Rolling Stone Music Now wherever you get your podcasts. And please leave us 5 stars and a nice review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, because that's always appreciated. But as always, thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going?
Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.